From Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles, this is Free Speech Radio News for Monday, October 13, 2008. On today's newscast, we'll look at the Democrats' new plan for economic stimulus and what it could mean for everyday people.
Mr. Paulson's package began as a rescue for Wall Street. This one needs to be entirely a rescue for ordinary people.
Wachovia Bank denies college's badly needed loans, but provides $8 million to the National Republican Congressional Committee. And we'll go to Guatemala, where thousands of people gather for the America's Social Forum.
We have come here to Guatemala to be face-to-face with the conditions that cause people to migrate.
I'm Aura Bogado. Stay tuned for that and more after this news.
I'm Nell Abram with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Investigators for the Central Institute of Forensic Science said today that riot police in Thailand used a cheap Chinese tear gas on anti-government protesters last week. The gas contained an explosive powerful enough to rip craters in the ground. The Chinese tear gas had high levels of RDX, an agent usually used in bomb making. Several demonstrators had limbs and feet blown off, and three were killed. Police insist they only fired tear gas into the crowd when protesters blockaded Parliament to keep Prime Minister Somchai Wongsawat from delivering a policy statement. 478 people were injured. A probe by the National Human Rights Commission is ongoing. As many as 5,000 people took to the streets in Bolivia today, launching a march that is expected to swell to a million strong by the time it reaches La Paz. Lenny Oliveira reports.
Thousands of Bolivians, indigenous, peasants, and workers from the most important social movements in Bolivia began a 200-kilometer march today from the city of Oruro to the government's headquarters in La Paz. They demand that the National Congress approve the constitutional referendum law so that the people decide with their vote if they approve or reject the new political constitution of the state. This constitution was edited by Constituent Assembly in 2007 and was one of the President Evo Morales' main proposals when he assumed control of the government in 2006. One of the main objectives of the new constitution is to prohibit the system of landed states, or latifundio in Spanish. The anti-latifundio prohibition has been firmly rejected by the conservative opposition, who don't want to lose control of big extensions of lands in eastern Bolivia. Conservatives have threatened to block the approval of the referendum law in Congress. The march that kicked off today was inaugurated by the President Morales and plans to arrive in La Paz the 20th of October. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Lenny Oliveira from Cochabamba, Bolivia.
An independent review of Aboriginal intervention programs in Australia finds widespread problems and says Aborigines believe the program is racist. The intervention programs targeted 73 Aboriginal communities and sent police and soldiers into outback towns and settlements in the summer of 2007 to deal with rampant child sex abuse and chronic alcoholism. The report, released today by Indigenous Affairs Minister Jenny Macklin, says that in many communities there is a deep belief that the measures introduced by the Australian government were a collective imposition based on race. While Prime Minister Kevin Rudd has made Indigenous Affairs a priority, winning praise for apologizing in Parliament for historic injustices against Aborigines, he has also promised to continue the controversial intervention, but to review the way it operates. Thousands of Zimbabweans continue to cross borders to neighboring countries as the economic situation worsens and a cabinet logjam by rival parties stalls the formation of a new government. Davison Makanga reports from Cape Town.
The stalemate left many Zimbabweans hopeless of a future that looked brighter 3 weeks ago when political rivals signed a power-sharing agreement. The cabinet deadlock has driven thousands of Zimbabweans to neighboring South Africa and Botswana. This is despite the tightening of immigration laws by the South African government. Since the signing of the peace deal by ZANU-PF and the Movement for Democratic Change, or MDC, South Africa's Home Affairs Department has been denying Zimbabweans asylum permits. Meanwhile, former South African President Thabo Mbeki arrives in Harare today to meet with the warring parties in renewed efforts to break the logjam. Mbeki's latest call comes after the MDC accused the ZANU-PF of intent to grab crucial ministries such as Defense, Home and Foreign Affairs. President Robert Mugabe today swore in his two vice presidents in what MDC described as a move tantamount to jeopardizing the deal. For Free Speech Radio News in Cape Town, this is Davidson Makanga.
1,200 GM workers are losing their jobs. General Motors Corporation announced today that it will stop manufacturing SUVs at its Janesville, Wisconsin plant in December. Another 35 to 50 workers will keep their jobs there until the plant shutters permanently next spring. Workers at the plant will get most of their pay from the company and unemployment benefits for up to 2 years under their union contract. They will have the option of transferring to other GM factories if jobs are open. For Free Speech Radio News from WMNF Community Radio in Tampa, I'm Nell Abram.
The Treasury Department has already appointed major contracts to oversee the bailout, and more contracts are expected in coming days. Meanwhile, Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama has turned his attention past Wall Street, introducing a new plan to stimulate the economy, and Democrats in Congress are following suit. Washington editor Leanne Caldwell reports.
Neil Kashkari, the 35-year-old former Goldman Sachs employee now tasked with overseeing the $700 billion financial bailout, updated bankers from around the world in Washington, D.C.
A program as large and complex as this would normally take months or even years to establish. But we all know we don't have months or years.
The Treasury Department has yet to begin implementation of its bailout, but it has begun awarding high-dollar contracts to financial institutions to carry out the crux of the plan, to buy financial assets or equity. One contractor, Simpson Thacher, is both a law firm and financial firm. It both represents and participates in high-level banking activity. Simpson Thacher will oversee the restructuring of equity programs. The contract was advertised and awarded within 24 hours, record pace authorized by Congress that sacrifices public vetting to allow Treasury to act quickly. One of Simpson Thacher's old clients, the recently bailed out insurance firm AIG, when it was charged with financial statement fraud. Other major contracts are expected to be announced within the next day. While the Treasury works to move forward, Democrats are working to switch its focus to help workers and a struggling middle class. On the campaign trail Monday in Toledo, Ohio, Barack Obama laid out a new stimulus.
It's a plan that begins with one word that's on everybody's mind, and it's easy to spell. J-O-B-S. Jobs. We've got to work on jobs.
Obama says his plan will give an immediate boost to the economy. It would eliminate taxes on unemployment benefits, implement a 90-day moratorium on home foreclosures, provide a tax credit for businesses that create U.S. jobs, give additional money to the auto industry, and allow people to take money out of their 401ks and IRAs with no penalty. Obama says Congress should implement his plan immediately. Working closely with the Obama campaign, congressional Democrats unveiled their next step proposals as well. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
We're at a time where we have to tighten our belt, take ourselves into survival mode as we see the challenges to the economy of our country, and make some very strong decisions about our spending priorities.
The Democrats' idea is the result of a series of meetings with economists. Foregoing the concern over the growing budget deficit, they focus instead on economic growth, proposals that will come with high cost. Congress will begin holding hearings next week on both long-term and short-term ideas. Short-term solutions include direct tax relief for the unemployed and food stamp recipients. It also aims to increase employment by giving money to the states to implement new programs. Long-term proposals include building infrastructure and to re-regulate the financial industry. Economist Robert Kuttner, a senior fellow at the public policy group Demos, was one of the economists meeting with Democratic leaders.
Mr. Paulson's package began as a rescue for Wall Street. Congress worked its will. It ended up being at least partly a rescue for Main Street. This one needs to be entirely a rescue for ordinary people so that the benefit goes primarily to homeowners and to people who are at risk of losing their jobs or who've lost their jobs, and to cities and states and towns so that they don't have to cut spending, raise taxes, and lay off public workers in a recession.
On the campaign trail, Republican John McCain also spoke about the economy. He advocated for free trade, more oil drilling, and more nuclear energy as a means to stimulate the economy. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
After a failed takeover by Citigroup, the Federal Reserve approved an $11 billion merger Sunday between Wells Fargo and Wachovia Bank. But as federal officials are scrambling to save Wachovia from financial collapse, the bank has been engaging in some questionable lending. The banking giant has denied nearly 1,000 colleges much-needed loans during this financial crisis, while at the same time lending the National Republican Congressional Committee $8 million for GOP House races. Chris Crom is the director of the Institute for Southern Studies. Crom explains how people and institutions with good credit were turned down for loans.
Well, the big story here is that Wachovia, for about a year, Wachovia Bank has been teetering on the brink of collapse. It's the fourth biggest bank in the country, had been a big source of credit and loans and capital for thousands of businesses, individuals, institutions across the country. But as its fortunes were sagging over the course of the year, and especially in the summer when it came out that they had lost over $9 billion because of the home mortgage crisis, they were drastically cutting back on the number of loans they were giving. And stories were cropping up across the country that thousands of small businesses, individuals, were getting turned down. And these are people who had been former Wachovia customers, new people who had a really sound business plan and lots of backing. So people across the board were getting iced out of getting credit and loans by Wachovia. And this really came to a head just a couple weeks ago when Wachovia announced it was freezing the assets. And mind you, these aren't loans or credit. This is money these institutions already had in the bank. They're freezing the assets of almost 1,000 colleges across the country, money that they needed for salaries, for construction projects. And Wachovia said, because of tight financial times, they were going to freeze those assets and not allow those institutions access to that money. This is what made it all the more surprising to learn that last week, Wachovia somehow had the money to throw a lifeline, a bailout of $8 million to the National Republican Congressional Committee.
We've heard how Lehman Brothers executives were getting millions of dollars as the bank was failing. And we heard that at a congressional level. Where's the investigation into this and where's the regulation regarding this?
Well, that's a great question. In fact, Wachovia has its own story where it was just revealed shortly after this came out about Wachovia that some of their high flyers were going out for a little cruise off the coast of California. Which, you know, whether or not they have the money to do it, I think it just looks bad when CEOs are kind of gallivanting out on cruise ships at the time when a major financial institution is about to tank and they're laying off nearly 12,000 people. Just kind of, you know, gives a sense that they aren't really in tune with how this may be perceived publicly. But I think the other big thing that came up in this investigation is obviously what Wachovia did exposes its charges of favoritism. They're denying credit to all these other people. Why did the Republicans get this loan? And that drew us kind of the next phase of this investigation, which is looking at the political leanings of Wachovia's leadership. And the two important pieces of information we found were that, first of all, Wachovia's main PAC, and financial companies tend to give their money to both parties. They like to spread it around so that they are able to have influence with whoever's in power. But Wachovia clearly had a strong Republican lean. Out of 62% of their PAC money, out of their main PAC, went to Republicans this year, and a strongly Democratic year, it appears, is going to be. And even more importantly, their new president and CEO, Robert Steele, he just came in July, and he's a former Republican appointee in the Bush administration. And in the last three election cycles, he's given almost $100,000 in political contributions, and 95% of that has gone to Republicans or Republican organizations. So clearly, I think that exposes Wachovia to even more questioning about whether this loan was politically motivated.
Well, thank you so much for taking some time to speak with me today.
Well, thank you.
Chris Crom is the director of the Institute for Southern Studies. You can hear the entire interview on our website, fsrn.org. Maricopa County, Arizona, is one of the fastest-growing counties in the nation, and for the past 16 years, it's been home to Sheriff Joe Arpaio, the self-described toughest sheriff in America.
You can see, if you see 10 15 people in the car with clothes you figure came from Mexico. They don't speak English. So we asked them where they're from. And if we can prove that they are illegally in this country, we put the arrest on.
But resistance to Sheriff Arpaio is building, and residents are fighting back.
The deputy asked me about four times, where are you from? I told him I didn't want to talk to him, that I wanted to talk to a lawyer.
Tune in to FSRN starting Tuesday, October 14, when we bring you a special series on what some people are calling a human rights crisis forming in Arizona. October 12 is an important day for indigenous social struggles throughout the Americas. Previously celebrated as the anniversary of Christopher Columbus's arrival, indigenous peoples now commemorate it as a day of resistance. Building on the symbolism, nearly 10,000 people gathered at the Americas Social Forum in Guatemala to demand social and economic justice for indigenous and all peoples in the hemisphere. We now go to Mark Becker and Jeff Juris in Guatemala City.
Thousands of Maya farmers from the Guatemalan highlands take over the main boulevard in Guatemala City's Zona Viva, an area traditionally reserved for the city's elite. We are walking next to a group of men and women, some carrying months-old infants, decked out in the colorful outfits of their local communities. At one point, they spontaneously shout out that popular movements are sweeping across Latin America. Yesterday, the Third America Social Forum culminated with the Continental March on the Day of Resistance of Indigenous Peoples and Nationalities of the Americas in Guatemala City. Since the first World Social Forum in Porto Alegre, Brazil in 2001, these gatherings have brought together social movements to create alternatives to corporate globalization and empire. Jorge Coronado, a member of the America Social Forum Hemispheric Council, tells us what was unique about the Guatemalan Forum.
Este tercer foro social Americas fue el foro de la resistencia del movimiento popular.
This Third America Social Forum has been the forum of resistance of the Continental People's Movement. There have been debates about some of the most urgent issues and principal social movement struggles, free trade agreements, neoliberalism, and mining, all of which affect rural and indigenous communities.
El neoliberalismo. Tema de la minería que afecta comunidades rurales e indígenas.
In building up to the forum, organizers tried to encourage greater participation of groups that had been historically marginalized within the social forums. Joel Suarez from the Martin Luther King Center in Cuba is one of the lead organizers of the forum.
Tratar de lograr un foro distintivo.
We tried to have a different kind of forum with a strong presence of women, indigenous peoples, young people, and campesinos. I think we have seen strong mobilization of indigenous social organizations and young people. Even children have had a presence in this meeting. Overall, we are feeling really good about the event.
Women's groups used the forum to build their ongoing struggles.
We declare that the participation of Maya women from Huehuetenango in this space is part of a process, not a single event. Our struggle will continue.
That was Benito Simon, a Maya delegate from the Guatemalan town of Huehuetenango. The forum was an important space for strengthening indigenous struggles, but there was also an emphasis on building links across movements. Humberto Chalango leads Ecuadunari, the movement of highland Quechuas in Ecuador.
Desde la unidad.
From a position of unity, we bring together other social forces, not only indigenous people who have been excluded and abused, a large majority of compañeros and compañeras, young people, women, students and workers are also victims of the neoliberal model.
Grassroots Global Justice brought a committed delegation of activists from the United States to the forum. Michael Leon Guerrero explains the important role of this organization in integrating the United States into the global forum movement.
GGJ was formed in June of 2002
as a vehicle to, one, strengthen national movement building amongst very diverse movements in the U.S., but secondly, also to strengthen our participation at the international level and build a different solidarity with social movements around the world where we can start to talk about, together, develop joint strategies around how we deal with neoliberalism and the conditions that are facing our communities.
The forum was also a way to connect broader issues to communities of struggle in the United States.
As an organization that works with immigrant Latinos, we have come here to Guatemala to be face-to-face with the conditions that cause people to migrate.
That was Maria Poblet from St. Peter's Housing Committee and a member of the Grassroots Global Justice Delegation, who was inspired by the spirit of resistance in Guatemala. As people drifted away from the march, musicians on the stage played the social form hymn, declaring that, yes, another world is possible if the people want it. From Guatemala, this is Mark Becker and Jeff Juris for Free Speech Radio News.
Immigrant rights groups used Indigenous Peoples Day to stage rallies protesting a series of massive immigration raids. Africa Jones reports from one such rally in San Francisco.
Around 300 people gathered in the heart of San Francisco's Mission District on Sunday to mark Indigenous Peoples Day and protest raids by Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
They are Indigenous and at the same time being called immigrants, illegal immigrants.
Evelyn Sanchez is the advocacy coordinator for the Bay Area Immigrants' Rights Coalition.
When you look at the historical analysis of this issue of immigration, it's really quite ironic that it's precisely the immigrants to this continent, European immigrants, that are telling people that are Indigenous to this continent that they're here illegally.
Claudia Reyes works with Mujeres Unidas Activas, an organization for Latina immigrant women promoting social justice. She says that ICE agents are arresting people everywhere.
For our members, it's a scary situation. They don't want to leave their house. They don't want to take the children to the school, to the hospital if they had an emergency, because they have a fear to see the ICE in the street.
Community members established a call network to inform people when ICE agents are in the vicinity. This year has seen some of the largest immigration raids in U.S. history. During an ICE raid of 11 restaurants in the Bay Area last spring, one of those arrested was Ivanka Lina, who didn't want to give her last name.
Many of us are still here, thanks to a lot of support that we've gotten from organizations and lawyers. But unfortunately, there were some of our co-workers that didn't have such great luck, and they were sent back to their countries.
Although Ivanka Lina is not an American citizen, her four children are. She says they worry for her safety.
It's been very challenging for me. They feel a lot of fear whenever I leave the house because they're afraid I may not be coming back. Sometimes when I leave, they ask, "Are you going to be coming back home?" So they have a lot of fear in that sense.
Activists hope the rally will let the public know that the rights of all Americans are in danger.
What is happening with immigration, it really is a human rights and a civil rights crisis.
Evelyn Sanchez.
The rights of everyone are being endangered when we basically say it's okay for federal agents to break down doors, to racially profile. So it's very important that the community speak up in opposition to this.
The rally was organized by a coalition of groups, including the Movement for an Unconditional Amnesty. Other rallies took place in cities across the country, including New York, Chicago, Boston, Tucson, Madison, and San Diego. Reporting from San Francisco for Free Speech Radio News, I'm Africa Jones.
For archives of this or any other newscast or documentary, you can visit our website at fsrn.org. You can also email us at comments@fsrn.org. That's comments@fsrn.org.
Music.
A broad coalition of activists gathered in New York City this weekend as part of the Jericho 1010 mobilization, highlighting the more than 100 political prisoners and prisoners of war in the United States and demanding their immediate release. The group met with United Nations delegations and protested outside the UN and in Harlem to demand the release of U.S. political prisoners serving long prison terms, including activists for Black liberation, Puerto Rican independence, indigenous sovereignty, environmental protection, and animal rights, as well as opponents of U.S. wars and militarism. FSRN's Andalusia Knoll has more.
There are over 100 political prisoners in various prisons across the United States.
That was just John Lamont speaking from South Walpole Prison, where he has been incarcerated for the past 24 years for his anti-South African apartheid actions he committed with the United Freedom Front. Lamont, along with numerous political organizers, both on the inside and outside of prison walls, have mobilized people for a 10-year anniversary of the 1998 Jericho March, where 10,000 people had gathered in Washington to demand amnesty for political prisoners. Ashanti Alston, former political prisoner of the Black Liberation Movement and Jericho Movement organizer, says it's important to let people know that the U.S. still has political prisoners.
We understand that there has been a 500-year war going on here, and everybody throughout this 500 years that has dared to stand up to the empire has been hounded, harassed, spirits broken, shot, killed, run out of the country, imprisoned. Yet, we still figure out ways to resist.
Laura Whitehorn, who was incarcerated for 14 years for, quote, resistance conspiracy, says the very presence of former political prisoners at the Jericho mobilization is living proof of the movement's victories.
Well, we've been fighting for political prisoners all these years, and we just saw a whole bunch of us up there who have gotten out. Some of us got out because our time was up, like me, but some of us got out because there were campaigns for the Puerto Rican political prisoners to get out, and they were freed by Bill Clinton. Susan Rosenberg was freed by Bill Clinton. A lot of people, and there are some victories in some of the old Black Panther cases and the Angola 3.
Luis Rosa, who served 19 years and is one of the Puerto Rican independentistas who Whitehorn referred to, says there has been a resurgence of repression against Puerto Rican activists.
Recently, what we've had since the assassination of one of our leaders, Filiberto Ojeda Rios, 3 years ago, we've had attacks by the FBI in our community. They've raided homes and businesses. They've intimidated communities, and they have caught people before grand juries investigating the existence of the Macheteros here in New York.
Rosa also drew connections between the severe state repression of the Black, Puerto Rican, and Native American liberation struggles of the 60s and 70s to the, quote, war on terror today.
Yeah, COINTELPRO to neutralize, discredit, and assassinate leaders. The Patriot Act today is designed to that, to neutralize community leaders, to neutralize organizations, to discredit organizations, to disrupt, to divide, and to even put in prison or assassinate leaders.
John Lamont, in the statement he issued for the Jericho movement, says that in addition to political organizers being targeted on the outside, there's also severe repression of political prisoners behind the prison walls.
Not only does America hold political prisoners, but we are being held under longer sentences than any kind of prisoners anywhere in the world.
For Free Speech Radio News in New York City, this is Andalusia Knoll.
You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News, which is made possible by Pacifica Radio, community radio affiliate stations, and listener supporters. You can send us your feedback by dropping us an email at comments@fsrn.org. Our newscast is produced by Catherine Comp and Vinod K. Joes. Our Washington, D.C. editor is Leanne Caldwell, and our headlines editors are Nell Abram and Jess Burns. Our technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley includes Rose Katapchi and Oscar Hernandez. From Pacifica Station, KPFK in Los Angeles, I'm Aura Bogado.